Dr. Elna McIntosh is a multi-award-winning clinical sexologist, renowned and well-respected in her field for her research, mentorship, and decades-long service in women's health, as well as her activism on behalf of some of the most vulnerable in our society. The only thing I can think of that matches this tremendous career is her equally magnificent personality, a cancer-surviving mom who candidly and hilariously demystifies taboo subjects, not just in sex. We need to get more comfortable with tough conversations. And the only way to do that is to go there. This is Key Africans Unlocked with Dr. Elna McIntosh.
Welcome back to Key Africans Unlocked. It's good to be back. And Chilu, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you, as always.
As always. Well, it's not always good to see you. Sometimes I see you.
Those days.
We have an incredible guest, as always. You know. And I'm very happy she made time for us today. I asked her literally a few days ago, like literally 3 days ago. Usually for someone like her, you might need to send applications months in advance to clear schedules. You might need to have approval stamped.
I'm a pensioner. I'm grateful. I'm grateful somebody even wants to talk to me. It's grateful.
We're talking about somebody who has been instrumental in the lives of so many. I would even go as far as to say hundreds of thousands of men and women in South Africa and right across the continent, and whose impact on the continent is going to be felt even long after all of us in this room have gone. You know, that's the kind of impact she's had in her career. She's a professor. Her name is Elna McIntosh. I'm going to let her describe exactly what it is she does for you, because I don't know what she does, not really. I kind of have
a bit sense. Complex.
Yeah, it's a bit complicated. I just know it has something to do with sex.
Yeah.
And if you ask anybody in general if they would like to spend their lives in a career to do with sex, they'll all just be like, yes, sign me up. So she's a clinical sexologist, I think is the official official description of what she does. But she's so much more than that. She's also an activist, I would call her, and a very powerful force in terms of shaping self-care and health across the board for men and women in South Africa. So I want to say thank you, first of all, Elna, for coming, and welcome to the podcast.
Yes, I don't know what to expect, but we are here.
You're in good company, so it's going to be nice and easy, and we'll learn a lot. That's what I'm excited about.
What I like to tell people when they come through is, like, literally think of this as us chilling in your kitchen space. Well, it's not really your kitchen space. It's your son's kitchen space.
And we won't tell him.
No, he's going to have to figure this out. Here. When he figures it out, he will figure it out.
That looks familiar.
That looks strangely familiar. We're just going to sit out here, hang around and talk, and whatever comes to your mind comes. There's no broadcast rules here. You can speak freely. Yeah. If a swear word comes out, swear. If you want to be brutally honest, be brutally honest, because that's how we are here. And our conversation is literally centered around just unwrapping what kind of person you are and the kind of work you've done, with the aim, of course, of touching somebody out there who might be listening and who might give a damn, you know? And I'm sure a lot of them will.
It's a bit like what I say when patients come to see me is, just think of me as your auntie, the one that you can tell them anything.
Yeah.
And then we'll unpack that.
And they eventually do tell you.
Because everybody thinks it's easy to talk about sex.
Yeah.
But when it's actually something that's so personal, and if you think on the continent, doesn't matter east, west, north, south, wherever you are, we are all brought up with, don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Keep them ignorant. They will remain innocent.
Right.
And then where do we learn? We learn from our friends. We learn on the school grounds. Mm. And nowadays with social media, in the old days you would have had to have some porn magazine to learn. But now it's all there. Yeah. And I do think in social media, good and bad, because there's some good information out there as well. I want to believe I write it.
Yes, we'll talk about the author part of you real soon. I never had a sex conversation with my dad growing up. My mom never spoke to me about sex. She still doesn't. I don't know if you spoke to
her. No, the same thing. I mean, I was thinking about it driving here, that when my dad, because normally these things are touchy, even when he had to shop for underwear for us, he'd say, we have to buy those embarrassing things.
Really?
And that's just underwear.
You know what I mean? And that's just underwear. So imagine now, you know, levels ahead. I mean, he passed away 20 years ago, and we didn't have these conversations.
But
no,
wouldn't it have been nice, now that you've got kids, to say,
exactly,
you know, Dad, we never had this conversation. I need to talk to my kids and And how should I approach it?
Do you find it easy to talk to your kids about? And he's got two girls, eh?
I've got two girls, so it's a bit of a toughie. I mean, like, to a degree, a bunch of the questions that they have, I can engage with them, but I still think they find it more comfortable to discuss them with their mother. And so, you know, I'm still kind of not 100% a welcome party into the more intimate conversations. But I mean, even as for example, this week, I'm driving my one daughter, and the other one's also been roped into a bar mitzvah. And so... So, and one of them can't pronounce it, which is so funny. You know, we're going to a bar. Yeah. but increasingly, I think as they get older, those opportunities are starting to reveal themselves. And I'd be lying to you know, if I told you guys that I'm fully armed and equipped to tackle them. Because, you know,
as long as you're available, because you're the first most important man in her life. And if you're an unavailable dad, she will keep on seeking unavailable men. Because we kind of look for our dads somehow in men. I mean, how weird that sounds, how Freudian that sounds. But if you're an available dad, to say, you know what, that's a great question, but let me go and buy a book. Let's talk to mom about that. But not just go, no, we don't want to talk about that. Because I think for a lot of us, we never got answers. Or it was just like, so my mother's 88 now, and we are going to have this talk. I'm not sure when, but it's coming. I can feel it in my waters. You know? So it's just, we learn in our birth families. We learn about touch in our birth families. Either you the demonstrative, do you hug them? Do you just love these girls of yours and you hug them? And at some point they're going to go, no, Dad, no, it's embarrassing now. You know, drop me off in the corner. Or you see those kids, they look like this in their school photos. Don't touch me. You know, they're like, we're not the feely touchy. But in relationships, touch, your skin is your biggest sex organ. Because, you know, we'll go, oh, he makes my skin crawl. Or when I'm angry, or when your wife's angry, she puts up a no entry sign. Don't you dare. So we learn a lot through our skin. And when a baby's born, this is my mother. Her touch is soft. But if she has a mother that burns her with cigarettes, or babies that get abused learn very quickly through their skin. I'm already on a therapy mode here. Where must we go with this? Where are we going?
No, but you're in auntie mode.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think there's a difference between auntie mode and therapy mode.
That's why she's called an agony aunt when she's...
No, but you know what? If we've got kids, I don't think any parent wakes up and thinks, I'm going to stuff you up good and solid. You know, you're like, go, come, school. We're just so busy with our lives. But when there are times, we need to. And that's what I'm saying. You must be available when you are available. Because nowadays, you know, everybody's like this and the kids. And every now and again, let's have like...
It's interesting. I remember somebody way before I had kids said this to me. They said, when your kids are young, listen to them, and then when they're older, they'll listen to you. You know, that's so powerful. which I thought was sweet but powerful as
great
well.
Great message.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the clinical sexologist.
Yes.
Because let me tell you what I know, which is nothing literally in comparison.
Yeah.
There's a sex therapist. There is a sexologist, and there is a gynecologist. What are the differences between from the, just those three, what are the differences?
Okay, so
there's a lot of differences.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of differences, kind of.
So a gynecologist would be a medical doctor that then specialized to become an obstetrician and gynecologist. So they are medically trained people that will cut or script or... A sex therapist is often a therapist already. So they're usually psychologists, and they've done a little bit of add-on courses, and so they will do some sex therapy as part of the whole bundle of other things that they'll do. A sexologist is somebody who studies human sexual behavior. So we study from birth all the way and in between, and sexologists are usually made up of either a medical doctor, or so you have some background, you've got some degree and a master's degree usually. So medical doctors, psychologists, nurses, or who's left? Who didn't take psychology? Oh, social workers.
Ah, yeah. Of course.
So a lot of people do come from a psychology background, but a lot of them come from a medical background. So we either teach more, if they're medical doctors, we need to teach them to be a bit therapeutic. Okay. And if they're therapists, they need to know about medicine as well.
Gotcha.
Because we are going to get anything can walk through your door. Mm. And to know, and we are 10 sexologists in South Africa and probably on the continent. Yeah, they are. You see, it's not a recognized degree, according to the Health Professional Council in South Africa. So all of us have left the country. I've gone to America. Most nowadays go to Australia or to Europe. So we have these degrees that everybody thinks is weird. What is this? Why do you study this?
Yeah.
But boy, do people come and see us. Because people have problems?
Yes.
A lot.
Yeah.
Can people talk about them? No. And often people don't know where to start. So often your first port of call would be gynies. So gynies and urologists are actually my best friends because men would usually go to a urologist, women would go to a gynecologist or their GP. And then, so not everything is therapeutic sometimes, or sometimes you just have to, you know, there's a lot of myths out there. But I specialize in sexual pain, and not pain as in 50 Shades of Grey, pain as in pelvic, because that's like a choice, and that's also okay if that's what you're into. But and if you think you're not tying them up right, or you know,
safe words and all,
yes.
But the question is, are you then able to give them good advice on how to tie them up so that they can have experienced maximum sexual pleasure?
I think that's also where you've got to know your referrals and
then you send them to the right masochist.
So I specialize in pelvic pain in women.
Okay.
And these are often women that have never consummated their marriages. So they've been together for a long time, but they actually just sometimes people say, what does unconsummated mean? Mm. Well, it means that the penis did not enter.
So how long is that on honeymoon night? I mean, like how long?
So often that's when they discover it. The longest I've seen is 24 years unconsummated.
Whoa.
And so
as in a 24-year courtship or 24-year
marriage? They've been married for 24 years.
They're still in the friend
years.
Zone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. No. Chibu,
no, I'm not teasing. No.
I just want to clarify. When you're married for 24 years, it's not friend zone anymore. There is a lot of friendship involved, but clearly you're not friends anymore.
Yeah.
And that's why they eventually come to see us.
Correct.
But very often, it's literally honeymoon, we discover this. Because in a lot of cultures, so everybody saves themselves for marriage. So the foreplay is walking up the aisle, and then the permission is the ring. So people are also sexually illiterate, literally. And people would think, but how does this happen?
Yeah.
People that are sort of in their 30s now, millennials, have been brought up in they are AIDS era kids. In the 80s, we used to say sex equals AIDS equals death.
Yeah.
Now, not everybody thought, if I have sex, I'm going to die. But there are people.
Yeah.
There are people that have got this incredible fear. And so that built. So,
Can I just say, sorry, please maintain that train of thought. I was a virgin until the age of 21.
Shame.
And I only lost my virginity on campus at Rhodes University in 1996. The reason why I saved myself sexually until I was like 20, 21 was because I was afraid, A, God, right? I
thought it was insane. Church plays a huge role, or religion.
And I really thought I'd get sick. I was like, yo, women's body parts are the doorway to an illness. So
and that's what we teach as well.
Stay away until you know for a fact that this person is clean, stay away. So for me, being a virgin wasn't about, virtue, righteousness. I guess in the God sense it was. It was a fear thing.
Mm. Yeah.
I was afraid of God punishing me and I was afraid of catching the illness and disease.
But a lot of parents use fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you should fall pregnant, we will just kill you.
Or exactly.
We'll throw you out. So fear a lot of parents. And so I often say, when you do the birds and bees, don't do the hornets and the vultures. You know, we're talking about little bees and
little bees.
Because people can do the. I remember I've worked in HIV for so many years, and in the early days, people say, bring your worst AIDS patient. Wow. And then now they must be like a scary. Because when I was in school, they used to bring lungs to school. Black lungs.
Yeah. And now, smoking
now,
and
now
stuff.
People still smoked. Do you think the black lungs scared
them? No.
Yeah.
What does an AIDS patient look like? They look like all of us today because we have gone through so many stages. So stigma, I suppose, is still there. But for most of us, and I can't speak for the whole continent, but I can speak for South Africa, is it's okay. For us, it's a chronic disease and we need to work with it. So whether you've got blood pressure, HIV, you're obese, whatever, let's deal with it.
Yeah.
But HIV has, and mothers and the church or religion has caused a lot of young people to have this incredible fear.
Yeah.
But it's not everybody, because otherwise I would have a lot more work. My couple that waited 24 years, they just never, they said we didn't know where to go and look for help. So they were just happy. It's not that they weren't sexual, because they kissed and held hands and rubbed a little bit.
But it wasn't,
but they never penetrated.
Mm.
And so, and she'd now gone over her childbearing years, because a lot of people will come because, and I often say to them, so you've never made love, but now you want to baby make. And it's important to love make, because baby making is also something else. Because for a lot of people that struggle to fall pregnant, baby making becomes this whole, come home now, I'm ovulating, and the poor man's on some flight somewhere and he's got to have
to get the pilot to turn around.
And so,
listen, I got to go back. She's ovulating.
But, and then I call it panic penis, because this, I wish I was a cartoonist, like young.
How would you paint a panic penis?
The penis would just be like, she's ovulating.
It'll be a timid penis. It'll just retreat into its shell.
Yes. Because she's angry. She's on hormones. Mm. She wants it, and she wants it now, because it's about baby making.
Yeah.
And so, again, often these patients are sent to us because poor panic penis has become erectile dysfunction.
Shame, man. Poor dude. He's under pressure now.
Yes. So, and then there is something called performance anxiety, which I often see in young men. So I feel very sorry for men at the moment. I feel sorry for all of you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Since hashtag Me Too, men don't really know, could I, what if I do, I'll be the next Harley, what's his name, Weinstein?
Harvey Weinstein,
or should I just shake a hand? Or so a lot of men have this, they don't know exactly where they fit in.
Mm.
And then we have women that are like, I read about multiple orgasms, I want multiple orgasms, I want to be able to find my G-spot, you must just find it, you know? So a lot of pressure.
But do they know their G-spot?
No, they don't even ask. You know what, if I often say to women, if we had a police lineup, let's pretend everybody lost their vaginas today, and there's a police lineup of vaginas. Are you going to identify yours? Are you going to be like...
Surely they've seen their own vagina.
No, would be amazed. It's like the Bermuda Triangle. People won't come back from there. Don't go even look down
also,
there.
You know what, Chilu? That's actually interesting. When you think about it, with a guy, right? You're in the shower, for example.
Exactly. You look down
you can
and
just
you
see.
Need,
yes, you know.
But with a woman, clearly, there has to be an effort to actually take some time out to take a look and see what
easy.
You look like.
Yeah.
So we have privates and you have publics. That's really just the way it works. Because most men can say, well, flaccid, I'm this big, erect, I'm like this. Mm. I swing to the left, to the right, I'm circumcised, I'm not. Whereas most women are just like, don't go there.
Wow.
It's extremely ugly, and don't.
Mm. It's interesting how men, sorry, Chilu.
No, go for it.
Men will attach that level of freedom of expression when it comes to their genitals to ego. You know? So chances are they'll say, I swing to the left or the right.
How's it hanging?
Do women attach a sense of self-worth and ego to their genitals at all?
No, most of
them. I guess if they don't even look at them.
No. Most of them are just like, I don't want to even know. Don't even go there.
Well,
but if you also look at how we celebrate masculinity. So all the boys can swim in the nude. People are like, oh, come see Tulani and everybody's in the pool.
Yeah.
And if little Susie, Tandy, whoever sits with her legs open, it's like, close that.
Yeah.
So we put shame and the words dirt, because you spoke about it like indirectly. You said, I want it clean. Yeah. I'm saving myself. She has to be clean.
Yes.
And then because of clean, I see a lot of more patients, because women can be too clean. They wash, they wash, they wash, and wash some more. And granny said, go inside and wash some more and wash with. So there's I don't know why, but somehow if you go to like a department store where there's soap and things, all vaginas must either be vanilla, chocolate, or strawberry. What is it with that? Can vaginas not be just like vagina? I want the vagina taste.
The vagina-flavored vagina.
Vagina flavors, yeah. Give me the vagina flavors. So there's a lot of washing products that's sold. And in different cultures, different things are also done. Mm-hmm. You know, in some cultures, they believe in dry sex. So they will put tobacco, snuff.
Oh, my God. Just dry it up.
It must be dry. And then the other part says wet. It must be wet. Mm. So there's always also been
messages.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah, that if a wet woman is a loose woman, vaginas need to lubricate. Otherwise, they are not fun. Mm. And these are conversations that people don't actually have. Because people will come and see me and say, oh, no, I'm too wet. You must dry me up. Or men say, teach her to squirt.
Wow. You
know? So you have, because some
actually, let me ask you something about squirting, because I don't, where does that come from, that actual squirt? The actual fluid itself? Because I know it's not coming from the bladder, right?
No, it's not.
And there's no other sacs that I know of where that hold water anyway in there.
So Dr. Graffenberg, or that's why it's called the G-spot. So I've never seen one in my office. Okay, but then again, people don't come to the office aroused, and we don't.
No. They usually come when there's a problem.
So we can't find G-spots in a Grey's Anatomy book. But there's been more than enough research done. And men will proudly say that when she squirts, we have to put plastic on the, we put the plastic on the bed already, and we put out towels because she's going to squirt all over the bed. So there are people that have researched it, and it's so it's almost like a prostate gland that woman would have, because it's prostatic fluid. That's what they tell us. You know, if your wife can't or your partner can't squirt, just leave her alone. You know, it's almost like trick ponies. You know, they must all
stand on the hind legs.
Yeah. Teach her how to stand on the back legs. You know, and
Elna, you don't sound like you know anything about where that squirt comes from or what it is.
No, I don't. And
but then why does it seem to be such?
I can tell you exactly where to go and Google it. Find
but no one
it
will know. No one will know, because you would
you
know.
Just giggle or giggle. I'm wanting to say Kegels. Kegels is a whole other.
That's a different
Graffenberg. Yeah, because there's a, you know, all these doctors that do all their research.
So is there even a G-spot?
The people that have found them will say that it's definitely there. And that's what I'm saying. I don't look for them when they arrive here.
It's like unicorns.
Wow.
Unicorns.
Bigfoot.
Bigfoot. So you know what, Chilu? This time when people are saying, yo, find my spot, it might not even exist.
And again, you know, a lot of women are not aware that the clitoris is on top and not inside.
Right.
So the clitoris is also like a unicorn for some people. Mm. But it actually is a small little penis, and it's shy. It's got a clitoral hood that it pulls over its eye. But it has 8,000 nerve ends. That's like a lighthouse.
That's a lot of nerve ends.
And it has only one function, and that's pleasure. And so,
that's
amazing. So a lot of women that... that can't orgasm, they don't want to touch themselves either, because then, I mean, if you go back to biblical things, it's a sin or whatever your parents said, you know, grow hair on your palms. Did anybody? Can we check?
No, nothing.
Hair on my palms. So,
God,
there's a hairy one.
And trust me, I went in there. My life, I should have lots of hair on my palms. I really should.
And you know, there's two things that people don't want to talk about. And one is masturbation and the other one's fantasy. Try this at Christmas supper. Anybody masturbated this morning? How was it for you? Okay, so people don't. That's not going to work at
Christmas. Not necessarily to do with masturbation, but remember there was a clip that went viral about 2 weeks ago, is it, with Lillian Dube. She was interviewing.
Where she was busy saying. Yes.
Yeah, she was. She was being interviewed by
the sports presenter.
Thomas.
Anyway. It was Thomas Mulambo.
Yeah, Thomas Mulambo.
And she was asking.
Yeah.
Well, please explain, because there'll be people listening who can't.
You watch the clip. I think he asked a question and she talked about the fact that people have to touch themselves.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. It turned out to be hilarious because it was an embarrassing moment for him.
Yes.
But the illustration is that we don't talk about these things as much, and they can tend to be embarrassing and to a point of being, you know, crippling conversation, because you know, yeah.
Almost being taboo, you know.
So I love Lillian, and both Lillian and I have survived breast cancer twice.
Wow.
And yes, congratulations. Yeah, thank you.
That is incredible.
Yeah. And so again, it is about touch. Because most breast lumps, and we're in pink, see, pink, I've been pink month. Yeah, it's October. Yeah, next month,
November.
Yeah, yes. November. So it's important that we have the, I mean, just wearing pink isn't going to change things. People have to, the awareness has to start here.
Mm-hmm.
I got breast cancer when I was 36. And so it's kind of young, isn't it? And in those days, we just chopped the breast off. Gone. Radical mastectomy. We've moved a lot. I'm a pensioner now, so I'm over 60. It's lovely being a pensioner.
Lovely.
Oh, thank you.
You're so like alive and bubbly.
Yes, yeah. So for me, I do celebrate life because when you're told you've got breast cancer, I thought, that's it, I'm dead.
Yeah.
And some people do die by a diagnosis and not by being in a coffin. You have to get up and move on. My son was still very young, and I thought, I'm never going to see 40. And and then when I was 48, my breast cancer came back. And the second time around, because Lillian and I have spoken about this, she's actually just finished her everybody knows Lillian, hey?
She's an actress.
Comedian.
And she's a wonderful person.
Yeah. And this is the thing. People think of it sometimes it's a white disease. It's not. It's everybody. That's why I love. I often do things with Lillian and also Zuleika Mandela. So the grandchild
of Nelson Mandela.
Because Zuleika always says, it doesn't matter what your surname is. Famous surname is not going to protect you.
No.
And so we need men or women, you know, South Africa, men or women can touch breasts. But because most lumps are found by partners. Because it's kind of your breasts too.
Yeah. You're out there, and you get to know them. Thing, next thing is like,
Yeah, this wasn't there before.
This is interesting.
Yeah. And so people don't always want to admit that, but it's important. If you think there's a lump, and then with men, you need to first check your testes for us. Okay, testicular cancer in young men. Older men, it's a bit more difficult because a prostate examination isn't that easy to do on yourself, and that we leave to doctors. But after, and in Africa, we need to start checking prostates earlier. We see aggressive, a lot of the research are European and America, and we see aggressive cancer in Africa.
Wow.
So we need to, men need to start doing their checks. GPs must do it. We do blood tests for men and also the finger test, which lasts 30 seconds, okay? It's not going to make you homosexual. Yeah, it is a very, very important test.
And where is the finger placed?
It is placed in the anus to feel for the prostate. I know. But that is, we need to, you know, we need a spokesperson like Lillian speaks about. We need a... somebody on the continent to say, you know what, I've survived prostate cancer. We know that Desmond Tutu has prostate cancer. We know Nelson Mandela had prostate cancer. It is a disease of an aging man. If you live long enough, you're probably going to get it.
Yeah.
But we are seeing younger and younger men. And because they don't, I think it's most men, that's why I can't find a husband now that I'm a pensioner, because they don't live as long. They all, you know, I've got like a 10 to 1. There's a long queue, long queue. If you guys can just get old enough, there'll be women with drip stands and catheter bags
just
queuing.
Just lining up for you.
No, but it's true. If you go to a funeral or if the grannies all sit there together, there's one grandpa and there's 10 grannies. I look at my mom in the old age home, you know.
So men have always had like a lower life expectancy for pretty much all of my life.
But you know why?
I've always even known men
crazy.
To die earlier.
You drive too fast, you drink too much, you shoot at each other.
And you throw ourselves at danger. We do. That's true. We do kind of
but
put ourselves
in the But you know what's interesting is like, so I'm with Discovery Health and all those things that you mentioned, they try to curb it through changing your behavior because you get rewarded for certain things. Now, with the prostate screening, they used to at some point, I think, give points for you getting that screening done when you get to the age of 40.
Yeah.
So I was looking forward to 40. When I turned 40, I called, like, you know, because I want my points.
Yes.
And they removed it. It's off the table now. So because they're saying, and they're saying that now they'll award you points for a colonoscopy, which you do after 50. So, which I think is counterproductive in a sense.
Colonoscopy is a whole different. That's looking for colon cancer.
Exactly. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, I think they had a good thing going with the prostate because if it's like an uncomfortable thing to talk about and so on, and if you have points being flashed in your face, that's like an extra bit of encouragement. Although before we you know, I'm so frozen in your question, I was at a studio about 1 year ago.
Yeah.
And we're having a similar discussion with other men. Yeah. And the client, I think he had just had an appointment booked for one, for a prostate screening. And they're cracking all these jokes about it. And the guy says, imagine you go to the doctor for that test. And then he says, look, no hands. And then they all laughed because obviously the implication is, you know, back to what you alluded to earlier on.
Yeah.
So there is like a lot of stuff around it. And I think you're the first person that I've heard who puts it in context and says 30 seconds. You know, or whatever.
And it's a simple test.
But so important.
So important.
Yeah.
Because we usually, by the time we see the men, the cancer has spread.
Mm.
And now we're dealing with a lot more other things, you know. And you kind of go, oh, well, then now the outcome, because you've left it so late. And often the only reason why men come is because they can't. They're peeing on their shoes instead of in the bathroom, in the toilet, or sexual function.
Mm.
That is a big indication. And while I'm talking about that, cigarettes. Remember, you're only given about 1 million erections. Mm. So you waste a lot before you're 20. And then you start, and then you're counting them down here.
Mm.
So each time there's another cigarette going. Smoking, one of the biggest causes of erectile dysfunction. So if you want to have power, you know, we have such wonderful names for men, eh? Power, AK-47s, anacondas,
machine gun.
Women, we have such derogatory names.
They are
Nkomo, Gusha, Ikuku.
Although Ikuku, cake is nice.
Cake. Yeah.
Cake is delicious. I love cake. I'm not going to lie. Cake is for me.
Or it'll be like a flower. My flower.
Yeah,
my
flower.
Yeah. But I'm always impressed with men. Not, men have that strong, you know. And we, I still have to have a man that says, you know, doctor, my pipi is not working. It's like my anaconda. It's like there is no power. And then something about rounds while we're at it. Because it's almost like it's a boxing ring. And you know how she comes in a bikini? Round number one.
Yeah.
Round number two.
Yeah.
So often, when you're young, you have erections here, there, and everywhere. But as you actually get older, it does slow down. Yeah. And it's not about the amount of rounds.
No.
You know, we also want to sleep at night. And so often men will come and say to me, I don't have power anymore. I can only do 3 rounds. I'm like, how many did you want to do now, dear? You know, you're young.
But also the perception is that women want more rounds, right? Women want to go as many times and as long as possible.
I think we want to sleep as well.
That's true. There are times, and there's a time and a place
for you. To wind down.
Yeah. Sometimes all you want to do is just go
to bed. So that for me, and I've got 4 T's, and that is the talking T, the communication.
Mm-hmm.
Because often your expectation is she wants many rounds, and her expectation is, he wants to, you know, and then nobody really talks to each other.
Right.
So the 4 T's stand for time, trust, talk, and touch, because nobody's got time, and we have to actually make time. And those are those, because now you've got little girls and we have to do date nights and things. And date nights have expectations of, we must have sex this night, and then we leave it again. So the average couple, double income with kids, or dinkies, double incomes, no kids.
That's
you're a dinky, and you're just a double income with kids, without kids.
I'm a dinky.
With kids.
You know,
there's such a thing called a twinkie, which you don't want to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's one of these weird terms that keep, you know, every single generation keeps coming up with weird
stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, you'll tell us twinkie later.
Yeah, it's a different story.
I want to hear.
It's a different story, because when you said I'm a twinkie, I was like, you're a twinkie.
Anyway, on average, if you're having sex 3 times a month, every 10th day, you're actually doing all right in a busy place, because she'll have a period for 1 week. So there you're left with 21 days. And if you divide that up, that's once a week.
It's a science.
Because every year there's the Durek Sex Survey. Hallelujah, our brothers from Nigeria, you are the winners every year, because you are all computer literate and you do the sex survey. So every year,
they come out as the winners every year.
Yes, because nobody else fills it in. And then we're like, in Africa, this is what happens. And then everybody's like, we're supposed to have sex 296 times a year. So there's a lot of bragging. And like you said, guys joke about it.
Yeah.
No. Women, we just sit around, we don't talk about it. And we should, because have you had your pap smear? Have you done your things? Do all those things.
Yeah.
And I'm tired now.
Okay, well let's ask you a couple more questions, and you can keep these brief. So one of the things that I love about what you've done with your career is your activism part. Mm. And you were a very serious activist when it came to basically making sure that sex workers had their health share as well. They deserve to be healthy too, you know? And you are very instrumental with giving women the right to choose as well. Tell us a little bit about that. Nothing major, just like your biggest takeaways from that experience. So people can then Google and find out the details. You don't have to tell us that.
So one of the laws that haven't been changed in this country is the Sex Worker Act. So it's the Sex Act of 1959. It is 60 years old last year. So we've been working towards decriminalization because my argument has always been sex work is work. It's a choice this person chooses. And like any work, see it as an occupational health hazard. Mm. If I do examinations, I wear gloves. I never have sex with my patients. But if your job is to have sex with your clients, be it safe, don't get arrest, don't, you know, that certain laws are in place. So that we try and learn from other countries. In parts of Australia, it's legal. In America, it's legal in some states. But in the rest of the world, we just lock them up. And sex workers are there. They've been there since the biblical times. So yeah. It's not the
oldest profession in the world, apparently.
Exactly. So that's the one thing I'm hoping will change. And the other one is dying with dignity. Because that also, those are the two that I hope in my lifetime I can see. Because again, I feel strongly about choice and people's choice and dignity. So the others that I was kind of very involved in is the termination of pregnancies, and that came from 1996. But it's almost like we've gone full circle, because as much as abortions are legal, and it's only legal in a few countries on the continent, it's become extremely illegal. You know, you just have to drive down the road and everywhere you see pain-free. Well, it's always usually next to bum enlargement, penis enlargement and abortions. Yeah. That is completely illegal. And it pains me because women think that's where they must go. So we have more backstreet abortions and they happen all over the continent. Yeah. And women are dying. And I think that's always been my thing, is about if it has to be done, it must be done safe and legal.
Yeah.
Gay marriages, I can't put that one on here, but that kind of constitutionally changed. But I feel strongly also about people's choices. Yeah. You know, if you are in love with a same sex, at least in South Africa, we it can happen, but we are still a bunch of hypocrites.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we still give people a hard time. Home affairs are not really all that friendly with transgender people that have to transgender. I'm always told, you know, this English is a difficult language for me sometimes.
Also because the terms keep changing all the time, so it's very difficult to navigate the space between what's
LGBTIQ and A.
There's an A.
Asexual.
Oh.
So okay. Tell your wife
she's pansexual.
Yeah? Well, pansexual kind of falls with a bisexual, and if you. So there's a lot of things. And usually, if those questions come, I'm like, you know what? Speak to that one. That's what's been nice about my work over the years.
Yeah. Is beautiful.
I have mentored amazing young people. I'm like a, I don't know what sort of a mother, a bar mitzvah mother, a Jewish mother. I get pleasure out of seeing young women.
Yeah.
Dr. T is one of the young women that just grew. You know, she works together with me. She's my colleague, but she's all over. She's on that Twitter. She goes.
Dr. T would be Dr. Tlaleng.
Dr. Tlaleng Mofokeng. Amazing, amazing woman who is more out of the country than here. She won a Bill and Melinda Gates scholarship. A fellowship, and Bill loves her. So she's wonderful. Just been in Berlin. She's like a champion, something. And then she gets to sit in the front of the aeroplane, and then she speaks about sexuality in Africa. I need the young blood to come through now.
And I think that's one of the biggest legacies you've had in your career is not only have you been personally active in the space, but you've also activated others to be active as well.
Yeah.
And that is a powerful legacy to have, you know, to be able to inspire people, It's like you can do only so much with your own resources in your life, but with other people's resources and other people's lives, that's been one of the most outstanding things about your career that I've noticed is that you're able to take the ability from others to also activate and energize.
But I must tell you, I'm very strict with them. When they first come, because I, as much as I joke, and I still want to be a stand-up comedian,
I saw that on Twitter bio.
Yes, I want to, I want to give Tumi Maroki a go. I want to, my book is going to be called Cocktails, hey? It'll just be about stories about men. But when, there's a lot of students that write to me and say, I want to be just like you and whatever. And then I'm like, Are you serious about this? What are you going to study? Prove to me that I can take you under my wing. Because I tell you, when I take them under my wing, my goodness, it's on. And I work hard with them. And I sit on the internet and I look for where's fellowships going. And like YALI, the Young African Legions Initiative. But it's now, I don't think they want to go anymore because it's not so much fun to go and now there's a different person in the White House. But I think
there's a different guy there now.
And it was it's been amazing to watch these young people go over and they can go anywhere for 3 months to get a fellowship.
Yeah.
And there's a lot in Africa, a lot is happening around sexuality. I've got a young woman who can sign. And I said to her, you know how important you are because the deaf community and we don't think that disabled. Imagine. If you look at, I have a big love for disability and sexuality because we kind of think, oh God, the cripples are going to have sex. Disastrous. Like
we don't think they have sex at all. It's hard to imagine people who can't hear or can't see.
I think on your website, you've got a thing that says there's wheelchair access to your center. That crossed my mind. Yeah, so
a patient said to me one day, he says, how can I not think of sex? Yeah. Well, he put another word, but he said, I'm at this height the whole day.
And all I see around me is just around
at eye level.